You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Come feel what you need when what you really want inside. you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. Our government cares about
ain't
you.
Ain't giving up a second thought about you, no. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell
ghetto
me. With your life
running like a red disease,
running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself. Yeah, ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi, Hotep family. Hope everything was well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day today, this Wednesday, this hump day. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping, too, that the weather is accommodating for you to do it. But, of course, if it is not, and it has to get done, it must get done, you will get it done. The will. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world, because if you can't listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, our program is 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Tomorrow, Thursday, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., Mississippi on the Move, the Black Liberation Movement with Brother Geronimo Pratt, with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. Yes. Friday at 8 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturday from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., the Sankofa Council of Elders, the Sankofa Council of Elders with Dr. Janine. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. This is Time for an Awakening. And this is African Perspectives. I'm just going to read some things and do some things that have been in the news. And I want to thank my dear friend, my better half. Appreciate you. Appreciate you, Ann. I do. But providing a lot of good information. So I'm going to just take stuff that's been in the news, and we're going to talk about that. Because a lot of stuff has been in the news, aside from the election stuff. And that's, I know you're tired of it. I know I am, you know. But a lot of stuff has been in the news, a lot of death. Probably the first thing I want to talk about is the young man who passed, who was murdered in Missouri by the state of Missouri.
Brother Williams. You know, what was interesting? Oh, wait a minute. Before I get off into that, let me do things in a sequential order. Yes. So we're going to talk about that when we come back. Let me do these things. I only do announcements once a week. I did announcements Monday, so give ourselves time enough to do what we have to do. And one of the things that we do every day on this program is read the Inyasasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. That's what we do, you know. Oh, okay. Okay, my brother. I'll speak up. How about that? If I speak up, brother said, hey, man, talking to the microphone. I am. So I'll speak up. You know, my voice can get loud, so I'm talking to the microphone. Okay. The Inyasasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. October 1st. Your teachers are all around you. All that you perceive, all that you experience, all that is given to you or taken from you, all that you love or hate, need or fear, will teach you if you will learn. Octavia Butler. Warriors must be humble enough to listen to the criticisms from those around them who have their best interests at heart. This requires that we earnestly listen to and value the critiques. Extreme individualism has led many of us to believe that we know everything already. For them, criticism is considered a personal insult. They shield themselves from all criticism and see this defensiveness as a positive measure of their intelligence or superiority. In such a falsified reality, it takes a mature warrior's strength of humility to seriously consider the value of each criticism. Ignoring or avoiding criticism is an understandable defensive posture to adopt towards enemies or those looking to divide us from within. But the same measuring rod for their criticism should not apply to those who stand shoulder to shoulder with us on the front line. Those who best follow in the footsteps of our ancestors are most qualified to offer us constructive instructions. Ashe. Affirm, I am an attentive student of all, of the all. I am attentive. Affirm, I am a attentive student of the all. October 2nd. Every day that dawns brings the events from which the face is forced to turn. I speak out strongly against it. My limbs are heavy laden. My heart is heavy with grief. It is painful not to speak about it. Another heart might bend or break, but a strong heart in the midst of difficulties is an ally to its owner. Kepra Ara. Make no mistake, the Ma'afa has not ended. The Ma'afa has not ended, and you know the Ma'afa. The Ma'afa is the great tragedy, what we have experienced and continue to experience because of Urugu. Through the above statement is ancient, having been crafted during the early stages of the destruction of the destructive decline of Kemetic society. Its words ring as true today as then. And for those Africans who know that the war is nowhere near over, and as victorious thinkers, we refuse to allow in any form of vanquishment. It is painful not to speak about it. Having to watch the onslaught of Urugu and others against us and our feeble reactive response to it in this day and age is painful. And even every need being articulated, those of us who cannot rest will never be able to pretend that this Holocaust, hell of a cost, is not still destroying so many of us. Those of us who want to gain a warrior's knowledge of why we subsist in this way, when we have the power within us to stop this madness and reverse it, have to ask and answer for ourselves a most painful question. And that is of exactly what would it take for our people to have moved from such deep levels of self-love to such devastating levels of self-hatred in the first place. For one claiming warriorhood, but who is hesitant on the battlefield for fear of challenging any serious efforts to destroy our people, and in fact embraces our destruction as if it is somehow a badge of honor, is like a bird that remains afraid of heights, but still wants to claim his or her wings. Unless to him or herself, or anyone for whom he or she is responsible. Affirm, I speak and work against our destruction, Ashe. Affirm, I speak and work against our destruction, brothers and sisters. The Inyasisim of daily revolutionary thought. Yeah. Yeah, we're going to try our best. Thank you, dear brother. Appreciate you, man. Yeah. Yeah, Brother Kwaku, if you could send me that piece that we watched yesterday, okay, so I can make some mention of it. Send me that piece that we did yesterday. I believe it was the French or the Spanish or, you know, beating the brothers and sisters. I mean, just beating them. And they are lying down in pools of blood. Some motionless, not sure if they're just unconscious or maybe even they're dead. Yeah. So when you can do that, brother, please do. Thank you. Will do. Yeah. Because hopefully through the piece that he said, that we watched, I can discern who is exactly. I mean, it doesn't make any difference. They're just Urugu. There's Caucasians, they're Europeans. And it's brothers, you know, who they're always trying to get out of a situation on the motherland, the place where everybody, the place where all of us as Africans should be. The continent of Africa should be dominated in totality, economically, socially, politically, you name it, educationally, should be dominated by Africans. Should be dominated by Africans. There should be no place on the continent that somebody who is outside of the continent has any rule over. In South Africa, where they have sundown towns, where you as an African on your own land, because these Caucasians who are upset that South Africa was changed and who are upset that they no longer rule South Africa the way that they did. Apartheid's not a reality physically, but it is there, definitely, psychologically. And yet, they have places where you can go do some custodial work, some meaningless work, but you better be out of town by sundown. You can clean up. So it is important, brothers and sisters, that we develop this, you know. It really is.
This call may be recorded or transcribed.
Say what?
Hey, what's up, Irv? Okay. Brother Irv was about to chime in. Okay. Okay. Yeah. And I tell you, it's deep, family. It really is. How we have allowed this to happen because of our lack of leadership. And see, I think what it is that there were times of ancient times where we went by that. Okay. I don't know. It says I have a problem playing this video. Okay. Well, anyway. Well, we'll try it another time, brother. Okay? All right. But it's important for us as Africans to follow the instructions of Africans, period, of Africans who are conscious, aware, committed, they love being who they are, they set the example. That's what we're talking about, you know? And that's what we must do. Yeah. I was going to trying to find out who exactly who they were. Were they French? Were they Spanish? They're Europeans, and there's brothers who are there. They look like they're in a cage, and the Caucasians who are dressed in their gear, black jackets and so forth, are beating these brothers with batons. I mean, they whacking them. Blood everywhere. Some are just out. Maybe they're knocked out. Maybe they're dead. And once again, you know, especially if they're, you know, it's the real hurt when it's period, if it's whoever it is, but the real hurt, as far as I'm concerned, is when they're French, because of the perception of the French. When you look at the history of the perception of the French, because you remember, if you don't, you know, the French have been colonizing Africa for a very long time. And yet, many of us tried our best to go to France. Even in that movie, Stowaway, with Omar Epps, you know, playing a Ghanaian brother, and I was in Ghana. I was in Ghana watching that movie with some brothers. I was in Ghana. It is a true story that this brother left his wife and child to go to France for a better situation than he could have in Ghana. And that's the damn shame. And the reason why it's a better situation is because of the thievery of the French of Ghana. And so he stole away on this ship. It is a Russian ship. A cargo ship, and it is on its way from Ghana to France. And of course, they want to stay low, make sure nobody knows that they're there. Well, a slip up happens, whatever. It's been a long time since I've seen this. This is probably the second time I was in Ghana, so it's early 2000s. Or late 1990s, I don't know. First time I was in Ghana was 1996. No, I came back in 1998. So, I don't know. Might have been then. But anyway, So they found that they were there. And these Russians hunted them like animals. They hunted them and killed them on the ship. And Omar Epps's character was one of the last people alive. He had a picture of his wife and child. And he put the picture of his wife and child in a big thing of beans, maybe coffee beans, I'm not sure. He put the picture in there. And as the boat was docking, and they tried their best, they did not want him to get off that boat. And these cats tried their best, but he got off. And he went to the French authorities and told them what had happened. Now, understand, had he not been able to have something to prove what he was saying, when it comes to their word against our word, and even that sometimes is not good. Even that, sometimes they will go with the word of the Caucasian, of the Urugu. But there was a thing that this Russian dude said that stuck with me and will always stick with me. I don't know about you. There's movies that I've seen over time where there's a scene or something said that kind of defined that movie for me. You know? And so this situation was when he told them about it, and they went to that bag or that big bundle, just like, you know, you use a big cargo, like you use a cotton or something like that, or some commodity. And he found the picture, and he showed him the picture of him, his wife, and his baby. And he put it in there. And he told him what had happened. And the dude who was on the Russian ship said to the French authority, he said, wait, we were doing you a favor, because nobody wants niggers. We were doing you a favor by getting rid of them, by killing them, because nobody wants niggers. It's just like when brothers, and that's the situation I just mentioned, where these guys are being beaten in a yard. There's fences around, and these cats are just, man, just beating them and beating them. None of them at this time in the video are putting up any resistance. They're not fighting back. They're laying on top of one another. And they're just beating them. And yet the French, who really owe Africa for their ability to rise monetarily, culturally, and so forth, because of what they have stolen from us over these many hundreds of years. I have great disdain. That's why it would bother me so much back in 2016, I think it was, when some terrorists, so to speak, opened fire in a French theater. And then it was such outcry and pouring for the French, and people had on Facebook, you know, all kinds of sympathy for the French. And I'm like, do you know who these son of a bitch? But see, once again, as I should say this in preface, that at the time, many of us went to France. There were some of us who left America and went to France. Josephine Baker. James Baldwin, many of them went to France. There's a movie, Round Midnight, Dexter Gordon. Dexter Gordon, Home Plate. Round Midnight. And they show these jazz artists going to France. The hell with the French. They must pay. They must pay. So I'm saying, you know, we have a lot to do. Oh, time is flying. Let me go through a few things here. Yeah. My good friend and brother was an ancestor. He made his transition just like Nana Balfour made his transition, Dr. Asa Hilliard, leading a tour in Kemet. And Rinoco did the same thing a few years ago now. It's a quote that says, history is a light that illuminates the past and a key that unlocks the door to the future. Right on, Rinoco. A dear friend, a good brother. I never forget when I first saw him. One of the first things I used to do, I had this program, When Black Men Rule, video that I had. I don't know where I got it from, but it was great. And it's still great. You know? Oh, what's the brother's name? Oh, man, Oshie, I tell you, damn it. But he was moderating. He is a city council person in L.A. Anyway, Rinoco's in it, as well as Dr. Finch. I think there's another person in it. And basically, he's talking about ancient Kemet, you know. Yeah. And Rinoco was small, too. So, you know. And then I met him personally at ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization. And I want to say I met him in Cleveland, but brought him to Milwaukee a couple times. We hung out in Milwaukee, took him around, you know. Here in Atlanta, it's the same thing. You know, in fact, I'm driving down the streets and I see him. I didn't even know his ass was in Milwaukee, in Atlanta. And I see him. I'm driving. And I stop the car and yell, "Hey, Rinoco!" Yeah, he was doing a presentation not far from my house here. Right there by the Slutty Vegan in that area. And he was saying to me, that he would like to do a presentation with Baba Baruti. He never has it. He admires it. Yeah. And Baba Baruti admires him as well. You know, he has taken photos and documented the African presence around the world. Around the world. When you go to some of these islands, yes, I know today of how the people look with the straight black hair and the lighter skins, but he shows them with close curled hair and melanated skin and so forth. These are the original inhabitants. The original inhabitants of the planet are African, are dark-skinned people with close curled hair. What makes human beings different is the ability to adapt to environments. Environments change. They change. And you must adapt. My good friend Rinoco Rashidi, he took this quote, this is part of the, he's also in that series, at least for a couple of times. Nasheed Tareed's series, along with Dr. Umar. And of course, him and Tariq fell out big time. So you ain't gonna see Dr. Umar in any of those. And I must admit, to some degree, that the series were good. I don't like Tariq Nasheed, you know. But I must admit, you know. But this is a quote, and it's not his. He gives credit to a brother that wrote it. He says, "What you do for yourself depends upon what you think of yourself. And what you think of yourself depends upon what you know of yourself. And what you know of yourself depends upon what you've been told." Who's doing the telling of what you've been told? What you think, what you do for yourself, and that's important, depends upon what you think of yourself. And what you think of yourself depends upon what you know of yourself. And what you know of yourself depends upon what you've been told. That's why history must be taught by us. We must scrutinize it. We must make sure that it's reflective of the truth of who we are. And this one I've known for many years. Your philosophy determines your thought pattern. Your thought pattern determines your behavior. Excuse me. Your philosophy, what you think, determines your thought pattern. Your thought pattern determines your attitude. Your attitude determines your behavior pattern. And your behavior pattern determines your actions. It begins with what you think and ends with what you do, your actions. So if your philosophy is that our women ain't nothing but bitches, hoes, and hoochies, how will you treat them? Exactly. But if your philosophy is that our women must be supported, must be protected, must be cared for, then you will treat them with respect and protection and care. It begins with what you think. If your philosophy is that our men ain't no good, you will treat them such. But if your philosophy is our men should be supported, they should be loved, they should be cared for, and then you will treat them with that love and care. It begins with what you think and ends with what you do. One of the things that happened, family, that was very devastating was the brother, and this has happened many, many times, so this is nothing new, as you know. Hold on. Let me get this set up so you can hear Brother Marcellus Williams, who was just killed. He was born in 1968, and of course he died a few days ago, when he was put to death by the Missouri governor, who's a different governor than the one who put a stay of execution to go through the, to make sure that the brother, make sure that everything has been exhausted and the proof of his conviction is what it is. And so therefore, the state would feel that it is justified. I'm against the death penalty. It's, you know what the death penalty is called, right? Capital punishment. Well, the reality of it is, you know what money's called, right? Capital, right? So if you got capital, you don't get capital punishment. But they have been executing. Ah, that's what I wanted to do. So maybe when I take a break and come back from the break, I will try my best to find out how many people, based on the Innocence Project alone, how many people have been saved through the Innocence Project? How many thousands? Not just a few, not just 10 a few. How many thousands, brothers and sisters? And you know how they allowed people to go free after killing us. I mean, a good example, of course, is Emmett Till. In that Mississippi courtroom, they pointed out who these guys are. And then, of course, when they were exonerated, they sold their story to Life magazine and told them, yes, this is what we did. We did it. But in the court, yeah, they did it. So this is Marcellus Williams. I don't know all of it. He's a Muslim now. He converted to Islam. And he's talking about his last day.
It makes me recognize, I'm saying, really reflect, you know, not to be pessimistic, you know, but to understand that, you know, there is good, you know, in the world, you know, and amongst people, you know. I'm at peace still, you know, no matter what, because of my faith. And I thank Allah for that, for his calmness that he has sent down to me. Whatever Allah determines, you know what I'm saying, I'm satisfied with it. There is a little supplication that the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessing be upon him, he used to say, oh Allah, if life is good for me, then give me life. If death is good for me, then give me death. You know what I'm saying? So that's how I feel. You know what I'm saying? I say the same supplication. So, yeah, I'm at peace, of course.
Yeah. And so, they gave him death. They could have easily stayed that for another amount of time. Easily. They were not asking to set him free, even though they had serious issues with how he was convicted. And in today's world, DNA evidence have set people free, but also have convicted people. Sometimes the DNA evidence is overwhelming in favor of those who are convicted, and sometimes it is overwhelming in favor of the person being exonerated. And in this case, it wasn't fair. That's what I'm saying, you know? And why this Republican governor, and I'm saying it that way, Democrats, Republicans, just a different wing of the same filthy, funky, nasty ass bird. But he was adamant. It's just like this piece that I've seen about another brother who was killed. And the Caucasian was just the judge. He was so arrogant. I just wanted to go through there and just beat his ass. It bothered him not that this innocent brother was killed. Because there's no respect. There is no respect for African life. That's why I'm saying what's happening in Africa, Africans throughout the diaspora, Africans on the continent, damn it, we must unite now. Take back our land, kick all these son of a bitches out, and let's control our resources. Let us learn how to do stuff together, build roads, hospitals, schools, towns, airports, shipping docks and so forth, all of these things that are necessary. Build a highway throughout the continent of Africa. Make sure that there ain't no damn passport. You don't need no passport. It's all of us. It's all of ours. And kick them Arabs who have been so evil. Do you know that? Do you know? And if you don't, you're going to know right now. They're still castrating brothers. Brothers who have went up even to Libya. Libya. And the French and the English and United States assassinated and murdered Muammar Gaddafi because he wanted to do something for Africa. Killed them. And Libya spiraled into chaos, to hell. All of North Africa, Egypt. Yes, Egypt. Today it's Egypt. Some time ago it was Kemet. The light-skinned folks is running it. It's Egypt. I take great issue with it because those folks are claiming that all of that history, all of the knowledge, all of that is theirs. They don't have a damn clue. Yeah. No, it's not. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. Take a little break in a minute, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the deaths, two prominent ones. And just thought about this one, John Amos, and now him and Jaffe Jaffa are in heaven together, man. James Earl Jones. I just not too long ago. Now John Amos at 84 years old. We'll talk about that. And of course, Dikembe. Dikembe Mutombo. Dikembe. A great man. A great man for what he's done. With his ability and his height to play basketball. Not only was he a Hall of Famer and great notoriety, he was a great humanitarian. He's what all these cats should do. I mean, buying a house for your mama is nice. Buying a big mansion for her is nice. Nice cars and so forth, all the material things. Be like that brother soccer player. Modest car and so forth. He puts his, I can't remember the brother's name. What if the athletes come together, African athletes for African liberation? How about that? They pull their resources, these professional athletes, they pull their resources and they begin to put money into to developing the continent. Yeah. Put money into developing the continent. I'm going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we're going to, talk about Dikembe Mutombo and John Amos and everything else that you want to talk about. A lot of good information that is out there. So, is that it? Okay, I'm good. I'm good. So, let's do this. Let's do this, family. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're going to be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Yeah, down to the bone. Yeah, let's continue on with this conversation. So I was going to do a little quick research here, of course. And how many people have been exonerated through the Innocence Project? I thought it was well over that. But anyway, this is a decent amount. 375 people. As of January of last year, 2022, previously convicted or serious crimes in the United States have been exonerated by DNA evidence. Since 1989, 21 whom have been sentenced to death. Yeah. How many people were accused to be found innocent? As of January 2020, there have been 2,574 people exonerated nationwide since 1989, which is when record keeping began. So I'm telling you. Yeah. How many people are wrongfully executed? Well, they say 20. Could be more. I believe it is more. I'm quite sure it is more. Yeah. Innocence. The Innocence Project. So, we're going to go now to talk about Dikembe Mutombo. Dikembe Mutombo was born in the Democratic Republic of Congo, near Kinshasa. I know they used to call it Zaire, but they took back their name, especially since Mobutu Sese Seko was running it. That son of a bitch was terrible. Although the rumble in the jungle was held there, provided a lot of money for Mobutu Sese Seko and his gang. But it is what it is. And now it's Dikembe Mutombo who should be hailed as a great man. He was born June 25th in 1915. 1966 in Kinshasa. Then it was called Leopoldville. And of course, that is, oh man, that's just, Leopold of Belgium and what he did, cutting off feet and hands. And those son of a bitches made mockery of it by selling chocolate hands. Belgium chocolate. All that they stole. If you would go and check out something of Belgium today, its skyline, it's all the thing. That is the wealth that they stole out of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Which family is the most mineral rich country on the face of the earth? When you look at it geographically, if you want to look at it as the supercontinent of Pangaea, they say that the earth was one great landmass, and they call it Pangaea. And then over hundreds of millions of years, through tectonic plates shifting, so you could see where South America could fit in, where Ghana, Nigeria, and so forth. You can see where the United States could fit in the northwestern part of Africa, in Europe, and so forth, and so on, and so on. But the heart, the middle of it, and that's why the continent is so rich, because that is the middle. It broke away. The root of the landmass is Africa, not El Cabalon family. That is not the name of the continent. And I'm constantly seeing that in the Facebook piece, and it just bothers me. It's just like everything else that bothers me. When Caucasians call us slaves, because that's them. They put that on us. I hate them, and I can give less than a rat's ass about them, but I'm talking about us. Because, I mean, I watched a presentation. I thought the presentation was good, but, of course, he kept calling us slaves because that's what they've conditioned themselves and made us to be conditioned to say the same thing, that we were slaves. We were not slaves. If you listen to this program, and you listening to this program at the very beginning, you will know that we were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master. We never submitted. We always resisted. People become slaves to fashion, slaves to drugs, sex, slaves to violence and ignorance. No, we were not slaves. We were captives. And what does a captive want to do? Exactly. Get free. And so all our energy has always been and always will be to free ourselves. And yet in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the middle of Africa is the most wealthiest, mineral rich. And out of that came Dikembe Mutombo. Dikembe went to Georgetown University. 1991, he was drafted by the Denver Nuggets in the fourth overall pick in the first round. During his NBA career, he played for six teams. He was in the finals against Philly in 01. And, of course, they dominated the Lakers. Philly won the first game when Allen Iverson hit that shot and stepped over Ty Lue. He stepped, he
he busted that shot and stepped over him. Not around, he stepped over him. They won that game, but then they lost four straight. And that was the start of the Lakers three-peat. No, I apologize. No, the first part of that three-peat was against Indiana. Or was it? Help me out here. Yeah. So, anyway, let me continue to look at some of the highlights of Brother Mokembe Mutombo, who is in the Hall of Fame. And he argues with Michael Jordan because he says Scottie dunked on him. But he, you know, at that time, he hadn't dunked on him, you know. He didn't dunk on Mutombo, you know. He didn't conquer Mount Mutombo. He didn't do it. But, of course, Michael wound up conquering everything. So we're going to, yeah, Dikembe Mutombo. Where's that one where he's,
I'm in the Hall of Fame just from blocking shots. So give me some credit. I'm not going to sit here quiet because somebody was lucky enough to get one dunk. But how many of those blocks I got on Michael?
Yeah, we can be showing that for days.
With the untimely death of Dikembe Mutombo, man, you got to go back to his time as a player. You got to think, Mutombo, 7'2", straight out of Congo, went to Georgetown, a Georgetown fan. So that's the first jersey I seen him in was a Georgetown. But he went to the NBA and absolutely cooked. Now, most people just think that Mutombo is a blocker. You got to think, in his prime years, his rookie year, Mutombo was 17-12-3. Like, he was getting a bucket. He was running the floor. He was rebounding at a high level. You got to think, this man, four-time defensive player of the year. He led the league three times in blocks, two times in rebounders, man. Eight-time All-Star. Mutombo was a problem, man. That finger swag, I got to block somebody's shot at open gym today and just wave my finger at him all day just because of Mutombo, man. RIP to you, Mount Mutombo, man. We're going to miss you. And cancer is a crazy thing, man. I see you, Mutombo.
Yes, it is. He said in that piece I just played and could hear in the background, it took Michael 7 years for him to get that one block. Yeah, Dikembe Mutombo, a great man. Yeah. So, there was another piece I saw here with Dikembe in it. Yeah, we'll play that too, because we're honoring him. He deserves to be honored for his work that he did. In, they don't call it Kinshasa anymore. And definitely don't call it Leopoldville. Hell no. But building a hospital in honor of his mother. Built schools. He used the NBA, the accumulated wealth that these men get. You know, you come in, maybe you did a contract for $3 million. Contract's up, you got that. You do the next contract for $7-8 million. Okay. Then you had $3-8 million. You got $10 million now. Another contract huge for $20 million. You know, you see what I'm saying? So that accumulation of wealth like that is huge. And he used that accumulated wealth to benefit his people, and to benefit the Democratic Republic of the Congo. But he's not the only one. Unfortunately, you know, there's not more. And I wish there could be some brothers and sisters who would say to the professional athletes, you know, to whom much is given, much is required. We appreciate what you do for your family. And believe me, that's probably the first thing you should do, is do something for your family. You know, but there's also, too, to do something for us as a people. You know? And bring these individuals together, the serious wealth that they have. If they accumulated just a good fraction, let's just say it's 10%. You know, 10%, I mean, 10% of $1 million is $100,000. You know? What if it's 20 million? You know, or more? What if the contract, who just signed a ridiculous contract? I know Shohei Ohtani signed a ridiculous contract, $600 million, something like that. I mean, and the saying has always been, if they sign that dude to that much money, how much money are they making? Of course, you know. Of course. But that would be the thing. And of course they don't want that to happen. You know? So I got two more pieces that I'd like to play for you. This is Dikembe in Dikembe in and also to Shanae, who is Obumike, who is also from the Congo. And she and her sister, Neka. And Neka's been an outstanding player. They both played at Stanford. And they both still live in Houston. A lot of Nigerians live in Houston. So... here we go.
Over the course of his 18 seasons in the NBA, Dikembe Mutombo was an intimidating presence on the court, regarded as one of the greatest defensive players ever.
Welcome to the house of Mutombo.
But he was also one of the game's greatest ambassadors, always striving to make his mark, not only as a basketball player, but as a humanitarian.
And this gentleman is Dikembe Mutombo.
Hey, what are you doing?
Sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
How are you?
I was always a people person. And then when I came to America, I know that this is where I'm going to live, this is where I'm going to school.
Born in Kinshasa, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Mutombo moved to the U.S. at age 21 to attend Georgetown University. He had plans to become a doctor, but instead quickly became a force on the court for the Hoyas.
Dikembe was smart enough to understand that his identity came with rebounding and blocking shots, and it carried him all the way through the NBA.
Selected with the fourth overall pick by Denver in the 1991 NBA draft, Dikembe immediately became a dominant presence.
Mutombo really made defense glamorous.
Yeah, he's a swiper. He will block everything that you go up in there.
It was Mutombo's heroics while patrolling the paint that helped lead the Nuggets to a shocking win in the opening round of the 1994 playoffs. The first ever 8-seed to knock off a 1-seed. They stunned the Supersonics in a historic upset.
Mutombo embraces the ball. One of the great upsets in NBA playoff history.
This is my favorite trophy. I'm hoping to win a couple more of these before I retire.
Mutombo would go on to win 4 Defensive Player of the Year awards, earn 8 All-Star selections, and in 2015, he was inducted into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame.
I have no doubt that young African players currently in the league or whose parents were born in Africa, Dikembe was all part of their psyche, part of what brought them to the game.
But for all of his achievements on the court, his efforts around the globe made the greatest impact.
When you succeed, there was a sum of regression to go back home and to do something.
That something would be one of his proudest achievements. When the hospital he planned and built opened in his native Congo.
I am very honored to be at this hospital, which is such a place of hope and healing.
Did you see that tall man there?
Named for his late mother, the hospital brought health care to many in need as it became the first modern medical facility to be built in that area in nearly 40 years.
What kind of impact did you have in the society when you was on the top? What kind of contribution did you make? Did you try to reach out to as many people as you can?
Dikembe Mutombo never forgot the land of his birth or the duty to share his blessings with others. And we're proud to call this son of the Congo a citizen of the United States of America.
This is someone who never loses perspective. He's talking about some of the most critical issues in the world. There's a hopefulness to him, and I think that's part of what makes him so special.
One thing I learned playing in this game, not every player will get an opportunity to win a championship. Even those who don't win, they're still a champion in so many people's heart.
I say, for those that don't win, you're still a champion. Especially in many people's hearts who have been able and been fortunate enough to be touched by your giving. Here's another one. This is Shanae.
It has always been Uncle. Uncle Dikembe is literally how he saved my phone. Because in our culture as Africans, that is how we show respect to our elders. And there was no one that I respected more both on and off the court than Uncle Dikembe. We all know his accolades as a Hall of Famer, his defensive dominance, that iconic no, not today finger wag. But it's his work off the court that is his true legacy. The NBA's first ever global ambassador. And through his foundation, he built a hospital from the ground up that has treated over 1 million people back home in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And on our many trips back to the continent, he wasn't just an ambassador of the game. He was literally a symbol of hope. He is Uncle Dikembe because he was family to each and every person he would meet. And the world is so much better for it. When people talk about Dikembe, they always say larger than life. But to us in our culture, mm-hmm. we have another phrase, another saying for that. African giant. He was truly a giant of Africa in his spirit, his resilience, and his joy.
That guy's a giant. Incredible person. I went to Dikembe Mutombo's hometown with him. I went to his hospital. You have no idea what that guy means to the world. To Mutombo's family, to Mama Rose, to his kids. There's no words. That guy was the biggest giant that you can ever find. The biggest heart.
NBA Today will be right back.
Dikembe. Dikembe Mutombo. Long live Dikembe Mutombo. Yeah. And that finger wag. No. Not today. Not today. Yeah. John Amos. You know, he was very accomplished. Didn't know how accomplished he was until looked up some of the stuff that he's done as a great actor. You know, I don't remember any of the episodes where he was on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and I watched that show periodically. You know, sitcoms back in the day, you never had too many things that you could watch on television. But one of the main things I'd love to watch was, of course, Good Times. James Evans Sr. And how he was outstanding as a father in that. Yeah. And as a husband. Yeah, he was outstanding. Outstanding as an actor. The roles that he played. I didn't see too many of the others. You know. But the ones that I did see him in, of course, the movies that he was in. He had many awards, you know, Primetime Emmy Award winner, NAACP Image Award, you know, so forth. And of course, the movies, The Beastmaster, 82 and 88, Coming to America. Coming to America was outstanding. Outstanding. Die Hard, Coming to America 2 in 2021. Yeah. Played football, Colorado State University. Wound up living in Colorado. Played professionally, signing a contract with the Kansas City Chiefs. Not sure they give a year on that. Probably before the merger. Yeah. 64, he signed a contract with the Denver Broncos, the AFL. But, of course, they had to let him go because he pulled a hamstring. Yeah. Went to play in the Canadian Football League, Continental Football League. And in 67, signing a free agent contract with the Kansas City Chiefs, and it didn't work out. Didn't work out. But his acting career was tremendous. His acting career was tremendous. Yeah. He played the weatherman Gordy Howard in Mary Tyler Moore Show. I think I remember seeing one episode where I remember him. He did that from 70 to 73. Since Betty White died from that Mary Tyler Moore Show, they were the last surviving people. That was in cast members. Yeah. Ed Asner, all the folks, they've passed on. Yeah. And same thing with at least the adults in Good Times, Valona. Yeah. They've gone on. Yeah, Good Times. I thought Good Times lasted longer than 2 years, 74 to 76. Watched it a lot in syndication, of course. She appeared, Florida Evans. She appeared in Maude. And then 61 episodes of Good Times from 74 to 76. And Amos, remember they got him out of the program. Number one, he was serious. He was a serious brother, and he didn't like the buffoonery. He didn't like the J.J. Walker's character, you know. He didn't like the buffoonery, man. And then, of course, in 77, Roots, and he was the adult Kunta Kinte. When he ran away and they came and chopped his foot off, you know, chopped his toe off. Yeah. Yeah. John Amos, a great actor. And of course, he had two children, a daughter and a son. And then I see a picture that was looking through some of the stuff his the granddaughter. Yeah. Very accomplished. Then let's do it again. And the role that he played. Yeah. All the movies that he was in, and the role, and the television role. So, I mean, hey, John Amos was accomplished and respected. And now, James Earl Jones, Jaffe Jaffa, and John Amos, Mr. McDowell, have gone on. And to me, it's great when you see brothers and sisters who have accomplished much in their lives. And he was 84 years old. Saw some pictures of him in the hospital. You know, he died back in August. Yeah, he died back in August. And then it was officially announced, you know, yesterday, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We have number you holding on, and you know what to do. Hit star twice. Let you in. Let's have some conversation. You know, on some great people, constantly people who, you know, that's the circle of life. You live, then ultimately and unfortunately, you pass on.
Do I love you? Do I love you?
Hey, Brother Irv, what's happening?
Baba Oshi.
Yes, sir.
As James Earl Jones would have said in Fences, which is a
Fences, yes,
a play that I'd done. He said, "You ask me, do I love you? Do I love you? You put a sir on the end of that when you say you speak to me, young man." That's James Earl Jones.
That's right. That's right. That's I love James that Earl part. Hey, Denzel. Denzel does it well too.
Oh, Denzel does an excellent yeah. Fences.
Yeah.
Him with that sister. Mm-hmm. And should have won all kinds of awards for that.
Yeah.
But because we are in someone else's house.
Right.
And we're Irugu moves the goalposts.
That's right.
Whenever Irugu feels.
That's right.
They want to. And that's why you have the situation going on in the so-called Middle East. Let's mm-hmm. keep it 100. Right. Baba Oshi, you know, like I know, Dr. Henry Clark told us about this whole pecan game they're running with the map of the world, mm-hmm. where Africa is this small place and Canada is damn near bigger than, you know, it's a joke. You know that's a joke.
Yeah.
But what you were talking about really quickly is John Amos. John Amos's career did not skyrocket and go to the limits of believability, if that's a word, because he would not take roles. And I read
right.
the biography on him.
Right.
He would not take stereotypical roles. He
right.
wouldn't take the Starsky and Hutch Huggy
yeah.
Bear
Huggy
role.
Bear. Yeah.
The pimps and all. He left that to other people who would do that. And
yeah.
and because of that, he didn't get as huge as he money-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was a social worker, he dug ditches, he worked
yeah.
in a restaurant, he did everything that regular people did, and a lot of people don't know that he was a writer. He wrote dope. He said, "I didn't know you could get on stage and be somebody else and not get in trouble for it."
Mm-hmm.
So he was an interesting, very interesting character. Mutombo, the thing about building hospitals and institutions and schools, those things will live long after you're gone.
No doubt.
You know,
and these
are the things that black people have, I believe American Africans have to understand that we have to build institutions. Mm-hmm. Of course, we have an institution in our children, but we need physical institutions that will be here like a Harvard or those types of buildings. And then that way we can perpetuate our ideology. Because Baba Oshie, this is about ideology. Don't get me wrong, Baba Oshie. I love watching football. I love sports. I played sports. I get a kick out of it. But sports has its place.
Right.
What I mean by that is you're a $6 million slave. And everything in my being has to tie me back to my motherland, which is Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't say your motherland. I said my motherland. I'm not speaking for you. Mm-hmm. I'm speaking for me. I teach this to my children. We are African. We are from Africa. And you can, come on. John Amos played Kunta Kinte, which I believe was an exaggerated figure in someone's mind. I went to the country and I saw the people begging for money and they said they were Kunta Kinte's relatives. But my thing is,
that's right. Did you go to Kambe Belongo in Gambia? Yeah.
Right. So my point is, Baba Oshie, you can't get this Africa out of me. And that's why I get so excited when I hear people, historians speaking, Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark and many others that people may not even know who they are. When I listen to them speak, it lights a fire in me, a fire of to seek knowledge. I want to know more. When you stop learning, you stop living.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, there's always something to learn, but we have to keep things in perspective, Baba Oshie. I don't mind talking about sports, but I need to tie it back to our liberation, to our sovereignty, to this revolution. See, the fight never ends. The struggle never stops. Mm. Irugu, these people are spreading or trying their best, these warmongers, to start some type of world war. In other words, a war where most of the world is engaged in it some kind of way, if not supplying ammunition, actually fighting. If not actually fighting, giving intelligence and intel. They want everybody to be involved in this killing spree, because that's all this is.
Yeah.
You're killing women and children. And Baba Oshie, if they come for you in the daytime, they coming for me tonight.
Yeah.
And if you think you find Paul over in England, which I know you don't, I'm just using that as an example, they're coming to get you. Mm-hmm. They're coming to get you over in Germany. Or they're coming to get you over in France. They're coming for American Africans because Africa is waking up. They're posturing different, Baba Oshie. If you notice, Burkina Faso and Chad, they're shutting down the mines.
Right.
They're making their own money. They're building. If you're not building a road, what I need you here for? If you can't build me a factory, what I need you here for? I don't need a bag of wheat. I don't want no Sally Struthers to buy these children and feed them for a month. Don't feed me. Teach me. Show me. Build me. So I can feed myself. I don't need white person or blue, red, or green person to come and save me. That savior complex is over. You sitting here waiting for Jesus? You go ahead and wait for it, Jesus. Your blue-eyed white Jesus will be here to help you. But until he gets here, I'm going to do what I have to do for my people and keep it moving.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't need nobody to save me. This ain't the movie. This ain't Wakanda. This ain't a white man in a plane flying around, shooting, killing black people. This ain't that. This is real life, Baba Oshie.
Mm-hmm.
And we are awake. We can read. We can reason. And we're African.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say that loud enough? I don't think people heard that.
I say.
We're African. And if you don't know what that means, open your mind. Open a book. Turn on your internet. Stop looking at games on your telephone and look at some education on your telephone and decipher what's real and what's not. Everything you see ain't real, Baba.
Yeah.
Everybody that got on Kente cloth and some shea butter, they ain't down with it.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Yeah.
And so go, I'm going to stop right now because you can go back home and turn your TV on and look at your sisters on the news, all the black women with the straight hair to tell you how black they are, and you can go vote for whoever you want to vote for. I could give a damn about politics. That's not my issue.
Mm-hmm.
My issue is what is going on in Africa. I didn't say Gaza. I didn't say Israel. I said Africa. Mm-hmm. What's going on in Africa? So you don't hear nothing about this Pope saying nothing now with the dress on. You don't see him saying nothing because these people are behind the scenes, Baba Oshi, and their brother Ibrahim from Burkina Faso just got four spies, and he's talking about giving them the death penalty, and he should, because they're trying to bring him now.
Right.
So now, Baba Oshi, this is a war. This is a war.
We are at war.
Gang.
That's right. We are at war, brother. Oshi. So we
so anyway, Bob.
All right, my brother. All right, Brother Irv, just hang on, man.
Yeah, but you know I'm listening, Baba.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right. Brother Ted Lusk, good afternoon, my brother. How are you? Brother Ted, are you there? He might have to step away, you know. He is at work, okay? Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Oshi, what's poppin'?
Hey, what's up, Jay? How are you?
I'm all right, man. I could call it. It's same old, different day, same caca. Okay. Hey, man, I had the opportunity to meet James Otis Amos a couple of times. Mm-hmm. Real nice man, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Just had a real nice spirit, man. And you know, he was pretty attuned to what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
In the world, he wasn't one of those.
Yeah, he did seem like he was rather conscious.
That didn't know.
Yeah,
he knew. You mm-hmm. know, he understood the culture and everything, man. Mm-hmm. And just a magnificent brother, and you know he will be missed. Now, as far as Mutombo go, Mutombo should be the example of what Africans in sports should do, man.
Right.
I mean, that man right there, if you're going to use somebody as an example of what you're supposed to do coming from home to here, using your skill, becoming very wealthy and successful, and then going back home and building something that, like Irv said earlier, is going to last for a long, long time.
Yeah. You should.
That's what
you're breaking up on me, Jay, you're breaking up on me, man.
I was saying that's what should be done. I mean, collectively, he should have had it to where as
Jay, Jay, you're breaking up on me real bad. So you want to hang up and call back? Let's see if this works. Yeah. Okay.
Yo, can you hear me better, Oshi?
That sounds good. Go ahead.
No, what I was saying was he should have gotten together all of the brothers and sisters that come over here and play sports, man,
yeah.
And put together an organization.
I agree.
To where as they went back home to wherever they came mm-hmm. from and built institutions.
Yeah.
That's what should have been done, and hopefully, you know, somebody will do that. Now, I know there's a number of brothers and sisters that have come here that are now really influential in the basketball scene in Africa, and, you know, hopefully they'll build upon that, but, mm-hmm. I mean, just a phenomenal man,
yeah.
just someone that died too young, and he left us a serious legacy, and, you know, he should be definitely appreciated, man.
Right
but,
on.
You know, that's it. Did you get a chance to watch that clown show last night?
What's that? I watched sports.
The debate.
Oh, hell no. I watched.
Oh, okay.
I watched Nightline. Of course, Nightline came on later than it was because of it. But I watched that in terms of, you know, hearing the pundits talk about who did what and how it happened and who they thought did well and didn't do well.
No, you didn't. I didn't think.
You know,
I didn't think, to be honest with you, anything was gained by it.
No,
it was
nothing.
You know, it was just basically,
yeah.
Let's get this over with, man. I'm just waiting till the 5th, get it over
right,
with,
exactly.
And then see what happens from that point on. I mean, the bottom line is if these people cannot see that this clown is not in your best interest, I mean, something's really fundamentally wrong with you. Because, you know, like I say to anyone, when you listen and you understand the things that he says and how it's really going to implement your life, I mean, just alone talking about tariffs, that right there should be the key thing for you not to want to vote for him.
Yeah.
And on top of that, like I always say, as someone that's in the tax range to benefit somewhat from his tax cuts, I didn't benefit on the level that he's making it out to seem that people will benefit from. And then think about it this way. You give tax cuts, okay. Then you just going to give it right back because of those tariffs. So it's really something to where as if you could be manipulated because of what you think is your best interest, but collectively it's not. Because I guarantee you, if he saves you $2,000 or $3,000, when it's all said and done, you're going to give it right back if he implements these tariffs. So, I mean, how you benefit? If anything, because of him, you're going to lose money. But people don't understand that, man. So, hey, it is what it is. Yeah. Just let November 5th come and go.
That.
We see what happened. And then hopefully we'll see what our position is going to be moving forward. Because the bottom line is we got to move forward, man. We got to figure something out to how we're going to survive. And you know, myself personally, I'm not really concerned about my survival no more. I'm concerned about the survival of these babies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like trying to say, what are we going to do to place our children in a position to survive this thing? Because it's not like it's getting better. You got a situation to where as AI and robotics is going to take away so much.
Well, that's the thing about the longshoremen. That was part of why they walked off the job. And it's very tenuous because, man, hit the holiday time thing coming up and so forth. But one of the components was saying that, no, we want to stop, or not necessarily stop, but decrease the efforts of artificial intelligence in terms of how it's going to run the longshoremen. They want human beings to be able to move cargo from this place to that place, as opposed to just like when you go into, I can't remember, was it Amazon? I believe it was. And you had all these robots moving stuff from here to
Amazon.
There. Yeah, you know.
Amazon, big football field factories.
Yeah.
With they're AI.
Right, they're and, two and three.
With robots and workers, too.
Right.
But see, the thing is, where they get you is they let you see human faces. And they make this notion that humans are going to be the one who are controlling and in a sense making the robotics operating, things of that nature. But what they never tell you is that it cuts down the workforce in half and maybe more. So, you know, what these longshoremen are doing is absolutely right, because you're trying to preserve
now
your job.
Right.
And it's not like it's really a skilled job. It's like, think about it this way. If you're a plumber, right, there's certain plumbing jobs that AI will be able to do, but then there's other plumbing jobs
that they
that
can't
only
do.
Humans can do.
Exactly.
So you need to place yourself into
the position that the job that you do, right,
to be able to survive.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love to know what someone like Ralph thinks in regards to AI in what he does in electricity. Is it going to be able to have robots do the type of work that you know Ralph does and others that have certain skills. So, I mean, it's real interesting. But, Osi, right. Listen, man, go ahead and
all right,
get
brother.
It to someone else, my
all
brother.
Right. Peace. All right.
Peace.
Thank you. Sister Abia, how are you? Good afternoon.
Hello?
Hello. Go ahead.
Oh, greetings.
Greetings, my sister. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Yeah, appreciating your show. And really a tribute to this revolutionary, this freedom fighter, this warrior for the people, Mutombo. That is so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And well, so strong, because we got some strong Africans among us that's dedicated and working for the people. And we had to put him down as one of the heroes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Very heroic.
Yeah. So I just give our say and wanted to, you know, echo that. And, you know, we're talking about, mentioned the war earlier, and it's really, you know, it's just such an abomination. And did you hear about, they were saying that Netanyahu and all them Israel, they are having Africans, you know, two Africans, they're recruiting them and telling them, trying to blackmail them and say, or white mail them, to say that we know you've been wanting to be a citizen here. So to be a citizen, you need to go on the front line,
oh,
you know, risk your life in Gaza.
Okay.
And then they go into Lebanon. And have you heard about that?
No, I haven't. I'm not surprised, but no, I haven't.
Our brothers, you know. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, they got the brothers and sisters from Dimona, Israel. That was part of Ben Amin's people that left out of the United States. And first they were going to try to settle in Liberia. Didn't work out. And then, of course, they moved across Africa, and they settled in Dimona, Israel. And they have a community there. And that's always been a mode of contention between the state of Israel and those brothers.
Yeah, they didn't really
sisters.
Want the Africans up in there.
Right.
But they'll try to use the foot to, you know, kill them toward the war. And, you know, I feel the same way. And I got concerned about what's going over in genocide of Gaza, because they're sending our African young men over.
That's
our young boy, our brother, in the Army, in the Navy.
Right. So that's why, and I agree with you in terms of, you know, you saying you're going to recruit Africans to fight on the front lines, and then that way you can get some, you know, you will never be a full citizen of Israel under the leadership of the people who are there and who created it, because they ain't African, and they don't want no black people, really, except for the dude with menial work like that, you know. So I have no faith at all in that situation. None.
There's holy Zionists. But we got to really protect our children. You know, tell them don't be going over there. I mean, because they joining the, you know, this military doing that, and it's an abomination. So, you know, we have to wake them up. They can't be going over there.
Okay.
Dying for the United States, dying for Netanyahu. That makes no sense. It's not.
Right. I agree.
You know, it's an abomination. You know, and then, you know, something else that was interesting, too, what Minister Louis Farrakhan was saying. Mm-hmm. He was calling the Arabs out, you know, because he was talking about how they lack unity themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he said, all you Arabs over there, and you seeing the Zionist Israel just murdering your people, and y'all not doing nothing.
Right.
He's calling out all of Egypt,
calling out Saudi Arabia, calling out Kuwait, Qatar, Oman, whatever.
Yeah.
I agree.
They got a good point, though. You just gonna let them slaughter your ass. I mean, what kind of people are y'all? They talk about, you know, black people supporting them, and it said they supporting themselves. What is that? They're gonna just genocide, just killing the mothers, the babies, you know, destroying their schools, starving them. And so there was the Farrakhan was calling them out. I heard him talking about that on the show that comes on Sunday. Come on Sunday, 7 o'clock on Sunday and Friday.
Okay.
Yeah, what they have a really good show. You know, you connected. What is that show that comes on? I'm trying to think of the brother's name. Comes on Sunday at 7 p.m. and you work with him.
Oh, on radio?
Yeah.
Elliot.
Elliot. Yeah, Brother Elliot. I really like Brother Elliot. Really, really do. But, you know, they was playing that and just called them out. So
That's Time for an Awakening.
The program is Time for Awakening. Yeah. So they were just calling out some of that. So Africans, like, we just unite, like you said, and Bifa
Bahodie. All right, sister. Bibi Fahodie. Thank you. All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Brother Ted. Brother Ted, are you there?
Yeah. Hello. Can you hear me, Brother Bahodie?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Real quick, I know you're coming close to the hour. I wanted to kind of go back to something that you started off your program with regarding philosophy and then on to thought patterns, behavior, and then what you do. So I wanted to go back to that because I'm curious to know, and I'm really interested in when Baba Baruti comes to the program, is how is consciousness developed or created of sorts at the very young age? What are the kinds and types of exercises, what are the kinds and types of things that he's doing to introduce or to develop an awareness, a consciousness at a very, very, very early age for this process of going from philosophy to thought patterns to attitudes, behavior, and then what you do all plays a part. So, but to be continued, and I'm sure, and as always, still listening, and thank you for your patience with me.
Thank you.
On the program.
Thank you for your contribution continuously, Brother Ted. Brother Ted, let's appreciate you. Peace. That's right. We're up against that time, family. Brother Irv, I appreciate you, man. We're up against that time. We're up against the clock. The clock the wall, man. Let me close this show out, close this program out.
Yes, sir.
We end this program, like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Abibi Fahodie family, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day. You be safe. Hope to see you on Friday.
Great show, Bob Oshie.
Yeah.
Good show.
Thank you.